On this episode of Skeptico, author of The Disappearance of the Universe, Gary Renard.
But Gary, they showed up for 17 times. You don't have a photograph. You don't have videotape. You don't have any kind of record of this.
Well, actually, they're still showing up to me. I mean, you know, we're going to do a fourth book together. And they do show up. And they said that for me to try to prove that they existed would be entirely missing the point. Yes, I could take pictures of them, but what would prove, Alex, that those weren't two actors in the pictures? If I recorded them, what would prove that those weren't two actors speaking?
And Robert Perry.
When I and a couple of colleagues came out with articles explaining our reasons for not believing in Gary's story about the Masters, that caused a huge controversy. There were a lot of people that felt persuaded by what we said. But I think the majority of people felt that the truth of his story didn't matter and that we were kind of violating spiritual protocol by saying the truth of the story did matter and let's look at the evidence.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode, I'm going to tell you why I'm a skeptic. You know, this show has been pretty critical of the skeptical community and the skeptical position on a lot of topics, but lost in all that sometimes can be the fact that I really am a skeptic in a lot of ways. And from that position, I do understand, I think, why folks are skeptical. And this show is going to give you all the reasons you need to understand why people become skeptical and why people even maybe cross over a little bit and become dogmatically skeptical. And I hope to also get at a larger, deeper question that's really been rattling around in my head for a while. And that's that if we accept the science that's been presented on this show, psi science, near-death experience science, parapsychology science, the best of it, that really leads us to understand that our world is quite a bit different than we normally experience it, that consciousness does seem to survive death, that things like telepathy and interconnectedness are real. Well, if we accept all that, then how do we deal with all these very strange accounts we have? And how do we adjust our filter to let some of it in, but keep some of it out? And that's going to lead us to Gary Renard, my first interview today, who's the author of several best-selling books based upon A Course in Miracles. And then we're going to have a follow-up and even more interesting interview with Robert Perry, who's quite an interesting guy, has written some very interesting books, but is also approaching things from this A Course in Miracles perspective. I think you're going to find it very interesting to see how all of this plays out. Here's my interview with Gary Renard. Today we welcome Gary Renard, whose best-selling books document his spiritual experiences with two ascended masters, who, as we discover, appeared to him in physical form to tell him the true meaning of Jesus' teachings and that you, Gary, in a previous life, walk with Jesus as the Apostle Thomas. Gary, thanks so much for joining me today on Skeptico.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Alex.
And I want to go back and say, I wasn't quite sure how to handle that introduction. Now, you know, of course, that's going to be jarring to a lot of folks, especially my listeners who are scientifically minded. First of all, did I get it all right? And secondly, how do you handle introducing yourself, your books, this message?
Well, you know, it took me 9 years to find out from my teachers that I was Thomas 2,000 years ago. So it's not like they sprung it on me right away. Yeah. So you have to actually read the whole book before you get to that part. And, I think that people ask legitimate questions, and I don't think that anybody would have taken my book seriously or me seriously if it didn't evoke some kind of an experience on their part. So it's like people...
Okay, I'm going to have to cut Gary off there. As you'll see, his credibility
just isn't all that great. So I don't really want to give a lot of airtime to a lot of his ideas. If you're interested, you can go read his book and find out more about it. But there were some cracks, I think, in the credibility factor when we got later on in the interview. So I want to play that little clip for you now. You know, one of the points at the book where I really had to stop and go, just wait a minute, is that you have these two beings, ascended masters, that show up in your living room. Amazing, amazing, you know, but not unique in that other people have claimed similar kind of things. So I'm not willing to dismiss that out of hand and say that that couldn't happen. But Gary, they showed up for 17 times. You don't have a photograph. You don't have videotape. You don't have any kind of record of this. I mean, anyone would say, hey, I have to get some record of this. I have to get some proof of this. And you don't have anything like that?
Well, actually, they're still showing up to me. I mean, you know, we're going to do a fourth book together. And they do show up. And they said that for me to try to prove that they existed would be entirely missing the point. Yes, I could take pictures of them, but what would prove, Alex, that those weren't two actors in the pictures? If I recorded them, what would prove that those weren't two actors speaking, you know, on the tape? And then it becomes about the validity of the proof instead of the message that they're delivering. And what they want to do is deliver a message. So I think that that's why they said, look, forget about all that stuff about proving and give people a message that will produce an experience in them. And it's the experience that is the proof. And it's also the only answer that will ever make them happy anyway, because this world is certainly never going to make them happy.
I do have to say there's a lot of folks, myself included, who are just going to find that unsatisfying as an answer, because it seems to want to have it both ways. I mean, we are in this world. We are experiencing your book in this world. If it's an illusion, it's an illusion, but that's where we're reading your book. So asking for something that's verifiable seems to be within the realm of what we would expect when you publish a book. Okay, again, forgive me if I don't give you Gary's full response to that, but let's move on and go to my interview with Robert Perry. Next, I want to welcome Robert Perry to Skeptico. Now, let me unravel how I came to know Robert, because I think it will provide a background for what we're going to talk about today. So, Robert, a few weeks ago, you sent me an email with a very interesting idea about how we might bridge this gap between skeptics and believers that we wind up talking so much about on Skeptico. And looking into that and talking about that led me to your very interesting book, Signs, A New Approach to Coincidence, Synchronicity, Guidance, Life Purpose, and God's Plan. Quite a mouthful, quite a book, but actually a book that's gotten some very nice, interesting endorsements from no less than Bruce Grayson and several other academics. But as we emailed back and forth and I looked into your bio a bit, I discovered that what you're really best known for is your work with A Course in Miracles, where you've written many books, over a dozen, and are internationally known as a teacher on that spiritual book, I guess we could say. And that, of course, intersected with the interview that I just did with Gary Renard, who is also a teacher in A Course of Miracles. So with that very long intro, Robert, welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Skeptico.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's going to be very interesting talking to you. I know, because we've had quite an email exchange, and you are quite a scientifically minded guy. I like a lot of the stuff you've written, and yet I'm challenged in some of the same ways that I was challenged by Gary's work. But let's start there, because the reason that I wanted to talk to Gary Renard, who most people would dismiss pretty quickly as being way out there and being not particularly credible, but the reason that I wanted to talk to him was because I think that once we cross this chasm, which I have, and I think many of our listeners here have, and are willing to accept the world that we live in is maybe different than how we normally perceive it. If we accept that the best evidence suggests that consciousness does survive death, if we accept that the best evidence suggests that medium communication and other things like telepathy and psychokinesis are real, well then, we're in a different place in terms of listening to people like Gary or other folks that we've had on that I find much more credible, like Andy Paquette, who has a long, extensive history of over 20 years of recording his precognitive dreams. Or Marilyn Hughes, who is an out-of-body traveler who actually joined me for an experiment that we did that showed very positive results in terms of suggesting that she did have some ability to leave her body and communicate with people who were deceased. Even though that sounds quite incredible, from the little bit of work we did here, it did seem possible. I want to shoehorn you in to this topic and see, in general, what you think about that idea of how do we figure out who's for real once we cross into this realm of saying we do have to accept that some of these rather extraordinary sounding things may actually be real.
For me, it's a huge topic because I do think it's important to have an open mind, but you also need some process for discerning true claims from false ones. I got into the whole spiritual realm, the belief in spirituality when I was in my late teens, because I decided I didn't know what was what. And I read widely, as many of us have, in some of the very topics that you mentioned a minute ago. And it seemed to me that there was evidence that there is some kind of spiritual reality. And that was kind of how I got into spirituality. And so for me, it's all about the evidence. I don't believe we should rule out claims out of hand as impossible before we look at the evidence. So I believe in having an open mind, but then we have to look at the evidence and make a dispassionate evaluation based on that.
Right. So with that, let's spend a minute and talk about Gary Renard, who, again, in Gary's case, I don't think, for me at least, and I think for a lot of people, it's not very hard to determine where he's coming from. I mean, he claims that these ascended masters appeared to him 17 times in physical form, and yet when asked why he doesn't have a photo or a videotape or a recording of them, it's because that would ruin the message somehow. I mean, that just kind of blows your credibility. But the article that you sent me that's posted on your website, I think, is even more concrete.
It's interesting to be interviewed about this. It's a topic that within the Course of Miracles community is a very contentious one. When I and a couple of colleagues came out about almost 5 years ago now with articles explaining our reasons for not believing in Gary's story about the Masters, it caused a huge controversy. There were a lot of people that felt persuaded by what we said, but I think the majority of people felt that the truth of his story didn't matter and that we were kind of violating spiritual protocol by saying the truth of the story did matter and let's look at the evidence. So for me, the evidence, there's a lot of lines of evidence. In fact, my colleague Greg Mackey wrote an article with 12 lines of evidence that he was looking at. But for me, it was pretty basic. First of all, I do believe that people have visitations from figures like Jesus that can at times have a physical component. There's a great book called, I think it's Visions of Jesus, by an academic. I think he's in Vancouver. I corresponded with him. William Reed, is it? No, that's not right. Some of the visions he details have a physical component to them. So I'm open to that. I think it happens. But when I hear 17 times for long, detailed conversations, then I'm very skeptical, and I'm going to need some really solid evidence at that point. And then I hear, like you say, that he had tapes but was told to destroy them. I read the transcripts or read his book, and he and the two masters sound like the same character. You know, they have the same kind of demeanor, the same flippant style. You know, one's just a bit more, you know, a bit more holy sounding while still being flippant, or two of them are a bit more that way. They don't sound like different characters. And then for me, and what my article was about, was the fact that I could spot instantly that the voices in the book were not deeply familiar with A Course in Miracles itself, but instead were clearly familiar with a particular teacher's take on the Course, and it's a very idiosyncratic take on the Course. It's based on the idea that the Course is largely metaphorical. We can't take it at face value, and therefore we have to reinterpret what it's saying all the time, and that yields a very unique interpretation, which the voices in this book were much more familiar with than with the Course itself. And to me, that sealed the deal. It was all over at that point. If there are ascended masters who know A Course in Miracles, they're going to be expert in the book itself. They aren't going to rely upon some human's tapes and books. So that settled it for me, and then there were other things along the way. And I can get to the Gospel of Thomas thing in a second.
If I can, I want to direct you to the Gospel of Thomas thing right now, because what I think is interesting about that is we have a separate line of verification in terms of biblical scholarship on the Gospel of Thomas. And it's
right, and it's a very solid line.
Right. So, and then what I read in the article that you published was there's several different translations, obviously, of the Gospel of Thomas, and they differ quite a bit in the translations. And yet, Gary's rendition of what he was channeled, or whatever you want to say, the Gospel of Thomas, is an exact match for one particular translation. Is that correct?
Pretty close. Yes, and the background is really important. In his second book, Your Immortal Reality, there's a chapter that was called Persis, Gospel of Thomas, and Persis, one of the masters, so-called, that he communicates with. And in the book, it relates how Persis says, okay, I'm going to give you the real original Gospel of Thomas, you know, the pure version that basically it is first heard here. And so then Persa gives the Gospel of Thomas, and this is, of course, the original. Well, it just so happens that a great deal of it, a very high percentage of it, is absolutely word for word in agreement with a contemporary translation of the Gospel of Thomas by a man named Stephen Patterson and a colleague of his. And then what isn't word for word is actually quite close to word for word. And so it's not a particularly subjective thing. These kind of correspondences don't happen by chance. And in fact, I happen to have already known the translator, one of the translators, and I've been in contact with him about this. I don't want to say a whole lot about that. Suffice it to say that it's an open and shut case that one has borrowed from the other.
That handles Gary. And then once his credibility is cast with that kind of shadow, which is a pretty big shadow, then we don't really have to go much further. But here's the real rub for me, is that, well, let's take a step back and look at A Course in Miracles. Can we really look at this channeled information that came through as automatic writing to one person in 1975, unchallenged in terms of its source, or which is supposed to be, the source is supposed to be Jesus, but we have no verification of that. I mean, it sounds like you've done good scholarship, good scientific digging on this one point, but I'm really stuck with, why do you think A Course in Miracles stands so far above it? How does it stand any different from Scientology, Mormonism, fundamentalist Christian dogma, or any of the other religious sects that we love to hate?
Well, I'll say a couple things about that. One is that, you know, the questions you're raising are really important questions. And they're the questions that I've had in my mind for, you know, 30 years now. We have to ask those questions. I think we also have to admit that it's something you can't prove. I mean, we prove identity in this world based on physical things, you know, fingerprints. You know, we how do we prove that a non-physical, incorporeal voice that this person, Helen Schuchman, the psychologist, heard in her head is the same as a person who was physically embodied 2,000 years ago? You can't prove it. At the same time, the course is definitely in a class by itself in terms of the list that you gave. You know, if you look at Mormonism, the Book of Mormon has all kinds of telltale signatures from books of that day. You know, every reason to believe it was borrowed from things extant in that day. You know, Scientology, well, that's a whole other case. The thing about the course is, and that's impressed so many people, and very intelligent people, and also very learned people in spirituality and world religion, is that there's a level of sophistication in its thought, in its wisdom. There's a level of originality in its insights. There's a level of artistry in its language and poetry that just is very unusual and rare. And you, at least many people end up feeling, and I've ended up feeling, that when I read the course, I'm just dealing with a mind that is above the human. I've read a lot of great thinkers. I have a lot of respect for a lot of minds. But I just feel like whatever wrote the course is just a bigger mind. He's a smarter guy. He's thought things through more thoroughly. He's thought in circles around the rest of us. And the other thing I'll say has been a very powerful factor for me is that I've done a lot of reading for the last 20 years in contemporary biblical scholarship. And for the last two centuries, scholars have been trying to piece together the historical Jesus. And it's a field with a lot of disagreement in it, but there's also a lot of agreement as well. And what I see is a remarkable amount of concord between what we think we know historically about Jesus from 2,000 years ago and what we see from the author of A Course in Miracles. The correspondences are, in my mind, quite uncanny. And while they fall, you know, far short of proof, they do, I think, strengthen this case that the author of the course may well be the same guy.
Okay, so there's a lot to tear apart there. And let's start with the first point that you made about proof. And of course, we're never going to find the kind of proof that we would like, the hard empirical data that we can get from science. But we do have a lot of different ways of pulling these things apart. And it comes down to kind of social science and historical analysis and those kind of things. And, you know, that ties back into your point about biblical scholarship. I think biblical scholarship is relevant here. And while I can certainly see where you can find the lines of coherence between the Course in Miracles and the modern interpretation of the historical accuracy of the Bible, there's a lot of divergence too. And there's a lot of biblical scholars that would not at all agree with some significant parts of the course. But all that, I think, kind of takes us in a different direction in terms of proof. I think it's important. I think we need to go there in the same way that we go there with Gary's claims in the Gospel of Thomas and are pretty quickly able to discern what's going on there. But the point that I really wanted to come back to was this idea that gets to the heart of what we began talking about, and that's that, gosh, it sure rings true. It sure is beautiful text. It sure speaks to me personally. Or, moreover, it has afforded me some kind of spiritual experience. And I'd suggest to you, those are some real bad reasons to believe that A Course in Miracles is what it says it is. Because we can have all sorts of spiritual experiences. And if we take a step back and we look at it somewhat analytically, scientifically, I can say, hey, people throughout the ages, cult leaders, and I'm not saying it's a cult, but cult leaders and all sorts of bad people have said, hey, give it a try. And if you have the experience, then isn't it true? Isn't it real? And that's not the scientific way of doing it. The scientific way of doing it is stepping back and saying, you know, hey, you could go through A Course in Miracles and you could have these profound sense of this is real, this is true, well, you can read all sorts of books and have that kind of sense. You can have a sense that this is a mind greater than mind, or that this could only be written by an inspired being. Hey, I read Cahil Gibran, one of my favorite spiritual authors, and I think it's truly inspired work. I don't think he was a divine being. I just think he was a very good author, and I don't know how he was tapping into that information. But that doesn't mean it's divinely inspired.
Well, I suspect that you could imagine a situation in which those kind of factors would be enough for you. You know, if I were to read, well, there are a lot of materials I could read, and I would think, well, this is very inspired. But I'll bet you could imagine a situation in which you were so blown away by the intelligence and the wisdom you saw manifest in a certain body of writing that your mind would get pushed into a different category for it than the human. That's what's happened with me for the course.
And I think that's what's happened with several people that I've talked to about the course. And I have to tell you personally, I would not go there. I would, and I don't go there, and I pull myself back. And that's where I feel that we need to be grounded in science, and we need to be, gosh, I hate saying this word out of my mouth, skeptical. We need to look at it skeptically and say, what other possible explanations can there be for this?
Okay, well, I have a very similar mindset to yours. However, I've gone through the process for a lot of years, and while I think there are other explanations, I don't think they're quite as good. I don't think a human could have written the course, personally. And so then I start thinking, well, then what are we talking about here? Maybe there's something in the unconscious that has that kind of level of intelligence and breadth of mind. That seems a reasonable idea to me. But the idea of a normal human writing the course at this point does not seem reasonable to me.
Let's say I'm willing to go there with you, Robert, and say that there's certain material that we come across, or in the case I was mentioning, Andy Paquette, who was on the show, there's some dream information that comes through in terms of a precognitive dream. Or in the case of any of the near-death experiencers we've talked to, there's some out-of-body kind of experience that clearly is beyond our normal consciousness. And let's say we take that material and we say, we want to treat that somewhat differently, specially, is more important. I'm willing to go there to a certain extent. But I also want to look at that critically and say, if I look at all the channeled information that's come through over history, I can clearly see that while some of it seems truly inspired, it's a very muddy picture because some of it is clearly proven to be wrong. It's predicted things that didn't come to be. It's said things that turn out not to be true. And I don't know if you buy into this trickster thing, and I don't totally buy into it, but it does seem that there is something else going on. And how do we know the Course of Miracles is not any different than that? We need a special kind of critical analysis of it. It isn't enough just to say, well, it sure seems to be divinely inspired to me.
Yeah, and I think I'm saying more than that. The problem here, well, let me just back up and say, I totally agree about channel material. I mean, it's a muddy area. Much of it is clearly influenced by contemporary currents, you know, in the culture, in the society. Much of it is, you know, clearly full of material that's factually inaccurate. Think back on some of the channel stuff I read years ago and the things that were said, and I can't believe the things I've read from channel material. I mean, things that if you know any history or science or just are ludicrous.
So then why believe A Course in Miracles?
Pardon me?
A Course in Miracles is channeled material. How is it any different?
It is different. It is different. And I think it's commanded a different level of respect from intelligent people for that reason. There is, you know, once you're familiar with it, I think you would see there is a quality of thought and wisdom there that is very rare. And that's kind of the issue. We have to evaluate something that we don't really have at this point in human history, the scientific tools to evaluate, and that is the quality of wisdom.
But hold on, Robert, because we're heading towards kind of coming together, which I have these discussions a lot, it seems, with that people that have a particular belief system, where you can kind of come together and then, boom, you jump apart again. And that's where I think we were. I mean, we were saying that we're both looking for proof. We're both looking for scientific evidence. And we're saying in these softer science areas, that doesn't come in really concrete black and white ways. It's in shades of gray. So the shades of gray here is that if we look at the larger body of channeled material, we come away and say, we can't trust it 100%. We have to be very discerning. And that, it, as it turns out, it all looks like it's flawed in some way that we don't fully understand. So we're coming together on that. I make that point. You make that point. We agree. And then I say, well, what about A Course in Miracles? That's channeled. You go, no, that's different.
That's not what I'm saying, really. What I'm saying is that I think the quality in this material is on a different level. Not that we shouldn't apply discernment to it, because I believe in applying discernment across the board. But what I'm saying is that with me, this has passed the tests of my discernment.
Do you think it's inerrant? Do you think it's without error?
No, I don't.
Well, then, if it's channeled from Jesus, where did the error come into play?
Well, it's actually one of the rare bodies of channeled material where the purported source of material would critically evaluate how well the material got through the channel. And so the voice that claims to be Jesus would often say to the scribe, Helen Schuckman, you didn't hear that right. And here's why you didn't hear that right. And here's what I really said. And so there was a whole idea built into this material of what the author called scribal error, which is when the channel, there was something, you know, clogging the pipeline, and things came through with some junk in them. And so I think that there are errors in the material. Helen did hear things that were incorrect. And I think that's built into this particular body of material.
Okay, so once Jesus corrected Helen, were the corrections correct 100% without error?
Well, you know, the corrections, the material is really, like I say, it's a wisdom teaching. The corrections were about the wisdom teaching. I can't recall any corrections about factual matters. So that kind of test really isn't available to us.
Okay, but basically what you're saying is that all the stuff that Jesus, to the extent that he was coming through as the channel, was without error. The only error would have been introduced is if Helen wrote it down wrong or repeated incorrectly.
Well, that's what I believe.
And why do you believe that, given the long history we have of the unreliable nature of channeled material?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, channeled material is, you know, there's channeled material and there's channeled material. Different materials are different in character. And so I believe that really based upon long experience with the character of this particular material.
Okay. I don't feel like I need to push that any further than I could.
Relate to where you're coming from. I really do. It's one of those things that, you know, maybe you'd be where I am if you had the same degree of experience with the course, but your considerations are very similar to mine.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, because it's one other area that I guess I'd probe a little bit, and that's the experience, because I think it's much, much harder for people to get away from their spiritual experiences. And when A Course in Miracles leads someone to have this transformational or this very deep spiritual experience, I think they're very tied to what they perceive as the source of that spiritual experience. And I'd come back and say, should we really rely on those spiritual experiences in quite that way, in such a literal way, linked to one particular source or not? And the point that I'd make is, you know, so we can have people who go through a Course in Miracles and have a spiritual experience. I had a guest on a few months ago named Nick Bunick, who claims to be the reincarnation of the Apostle Paul, whatever. his book inspires spiritual experiences of a certain type to people, and then they're drawn to his teachings. Similarly, I could go to the Monroe Institute and wear the Hemisync goggles and go through that, and I'm liable to have a spiritual experience there. So many people have. So as a scientifically minded person, doesn't that also give you pause to say, maybe we need to step back and look at what is really going on with these different spiritual experiences that to the different practitioners all look the same?
Oh, absolutely. But when I just used the word experience, I wasn't really talking about spiritual experiences. I was talking about this. I was using the word in the same way that, say, a naturalist would, who has studied a certain animal species for years and talked about his long experience in studying that species. I'm not talking about the spiritual experiences the course may have sparked in me. I'm talking about my experience with my subject matter as an intellectual.
Okay, Robert, let's talk a little bit about some of the other things you have going on, in particular this book, Signs.
What happened was, I'm 50 now, but in my teens, I started noticing some really extreme coincidences, and they just seemed too extreme to be chance. So what happened was, I thought, you know, these things seem significant, and they seem to know stuff about where my life was heading. Things that, you know, turned out to be true. So I just started focusing in on these events. And over time, I'd remember them and remember the dates of them. And then after a while, I started writing them down, at least some of them. Finally, I started writing them all down. And over time, what happened was, as my experience stacked up and as my skeptical mind sort of looked at things and turned them around and looked from different angles, I slowly kind of winnowed the field to where it was a particular kind or class of coincidence that I was interested in and putting my trust in. And these are kind of extreme form of coincidence or synchronicity. And slowly I realized there's a very specific phenomenon going here, one that can easily be separated out from your, you know, sort of garden variety synchronicities. And so in the end, I started consciously teasing out the model from these experiences. I have hundreds written down. I started, you know, working with them. So I learned the ins and outs of how to interpret and apply them. I began helping friends who asked me for help with their examples of the same phenomenon. And just slowly over time, it developed. When I met my current wife a number of years ago, about a dozen years ago, she became interested in this. And as we got married, we really together worked with these things. So what happened was, out of this long, you know, 30-some years of experience, I coalesced a model, and I decided it was time to, you know, publish something about this and tell other people.
And as well, you continue to work with A Course in Miracles, and would you say that's your primary focus as a teacher and writer on the book A Course in Miracles?
Yeah, the course is my day job. That's what I do for a living.
And tell us a little bit about your website.
Well, it's the website of the Circle of Atonement, which is the organization I founded about 20 years ago. And our job is basically to help people use the course as it's written. The course is a very practical book. It's all about practical change. And so we believe that it's like a cookbook. If you follow a cookbook, you end up with a better dish. So we're there to help people follow the cookbook, and therefore get, you know, better results from doing the course. We help people understand the book, work the workbook, and we have a lot of writings. Our website has, I think, closing in on about 1,000 articles and commentaries. And it's www.circleofa.org.
Great, and we certainly will have that linked up to the interview. Well, Robert, thanks for being so open and having this dialogue. It's really an important discussion, and I'm glad we're able to approach it like this. I think it's fascinating. It's never ending, and we just appreciate you participating in it.
Well, thank you very much. I've never had quite an interview like this. It's great to be talking actually about the course with somebody who has a sort of a skeptical scientific bent, because most course students aren't coming from that place. I feel like a bit of a fish out of water. That's where I'm coming from. So it's nice to be able to link up and talk about these issues.
Okay, thanks to both Gary Renard and Robert Perry for joining me today on Skeptico. I think you are going to have a lot of things to say about this. I hope you do, and I hope I hear from you, either on the Skeptico forum, on the comments section of the website, or on my Facebook page. In case you don't know, our website is SKEPTIKO. Remember the K-O. You'll find links to all that stuff, as well as an email link to me if you want to reach me that way. Okay, I have a number of very interesting shows coming up. Stuart Hameroff, Richard Strassman, Rupert Sheldrick's going to join us again. A lot of stuff going on. It's going to be hard to get all these shows out. A lot of work, but I want to bring them to you. There's a lot of interesting stuff out there. Please stay with me for all of that. But until next time, bye for now.